parasite can cause diarrhea, nausea, and gastrointestinal symptoms. At least 2 confirmed deaths have been linked to this outbreak of cyclosporiasis. In both cases, the patients had suffered from underlying health conditions. I'm Linda Kenyon, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Wallace Foundation, an independent, nonpartisan research foundation collaborating with grantees and partners in the arts, school leadership, and youth development. More at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.
To the conversation on WVIK. It's a weekly celebration of local radio the way it's meant to be brewed. This week, my guest is musician, educator, and historian Neil Smith. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll settle in and stick around for this week's conversation on WVIK. Well, Neil, thank you so much for agreeing to be with me this morning, and thank you for being the first guest that I got to meet coming into the studio, not only as I was riding my bike, but you were riding your bike. Thank you.
Yes, you were coming downhill and I was coming uphill.
Well, trust me, I am on the downhill. There's nothing magical about that, my friend. I am just so glad you were able to take some time to be with us this morning, and I'm not going to spoil it, but we're going to have a very special surprise later in the program, thanks to Neil and his research and his work as an historian of music broadly, but in our community. Before we get to all of that, though, the question that's on a lot of minds is that I first got to know you by being blown away listening to you blowing saxophone on stage in a variety of venues around the Quad Cities, bands like the Cabalas, the Metrolights, right?
Yep.
And you're an incredibly talented artist. But then I always heard you introduced as Nervous Neil Smith. So before we get to anything else, I got to know, where did the moniker Nervous Neil come from?
Oh, boy. Well,
I should have asked clearance to, you know, ask you this in advance, but that's live radio.
When I left Illinois State University in 1985, I was looking for a gig, and I wasn't really qualified to do a jazz gig. Couldn't really read chord changes yet. That's the quality of education I got there. Sorry. I should have gone to Augustana.
It's a great school, Illinois.
It is. It is. But the saxophone professor at the time was a little bit of a beatnik, and I'd go into a lesson with him, and he'd go, "Play something for me, man. Impress me." And I'd play something, and he would laugh, and he goes, "Man, you need to work on that. I'll see you next week."
Wow.
Yeah. And I didn't know. I'd never taken lessons before, so I didn't know. Anyway, I left without knowing much. I was a music performance major.
Cool.
And so there you go. I was only qualified to be in blues bands. So I was doing blues jams in Peoria. I was living in Peoria after after I left Illinois State. And I was at a jam session with Dave Chastain. He was a big blues guy. He's down in Peoria.
Yeah, I recognize that.
And I'd say, we're all up on stage. He wants a saxophone up there. And, you know, I'm playing in all these weird keys because they're guitar keys. And then some guy walks in and, you know, kind of gets quiet. And he's wearing a big cowboy hat and everything. And so everybody leaves the stage. It's like, well, Bernard's here, you know? And I thought, okay, well, I'll leave the stage too. And Bernard comes up and he goes, "Sax man, I need you to stay here." It's like, okay. I didn't know who he was, but I found out later after jamming with him a little bit. It was Coco Taylor's guitar player.
Get out.
Bernard Allison,
wow.
Who's the son of Luther Allison.
Ugh.
Yeah. A couple years younger than me, you know, just confident, good looking. And the hat,
You had me at Coco Taylor, by the way.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. Yeah. She got most of her guitar players from Peoria, I guess.
Isn't that crazy?
Maestro Saunders was from Peoria, Bernard. I found out he got that hat from Stevie Ray Vaughan. Yeah. They knew each other. So, I mean, there's all that. And then he told me he wanted to put a band together and go on the road. And I thought, okay, I'm tired of retail. So I went on the road with him, and we had a band together. And around that time, I'd moved up to the Quad City, so I was going back down to Peoria for rehearsals. You know, I thought, it's like, this is pretty cool. I'm in a blues band, and these are like real blues musicians, unlike me. And we're getting ready to go to London, Ontario for a two-week gig, and we're going to do a tour of Canada, Ontario, basically. And I went down to pick up Bernard. He had lost his license for certain reasons.
It's the blues.
So I went down to Peoria to pick him up, and we're going to head toward. He goes, "Well, we need to stop in Chicago first. I need to get some things from Coco, and we're going to pick up a bass player." I'm like, what? And I said, "Yeah, the drummer had broken his wrist in a bar fight."
Again, the blues.
Yes, and his brother was the bass player. Frank and Ray Alexander. I'm going to get the names wrong. I don't remember. They went as a team, and one wouldn't go without the other. And then the rhythm guitarist said, "It sounds like you don't have much of a band. I think I'll stay home." Oh. So we're picking up musicians along the way. We picked up Noel Neal from Chicago. He was dating Liz Claiborne's daughter. And Rafael Neal's is Kenny Neal. Kenny Neal's his brother, Rafael Neal. I think Rafael Neal's the dad, and then Kenny Neal. They're all blues guys from New Orleans, but he was living in Chicago. So we picked him up. We put the band together. This is on Thursday, and the gig starts on Monday.
Get out.
And I quit my retail job for this. And so I'm going, it's like, how are we going to rehearse? You know, I'm all, how you might say, nervous about all of this. So Bernard's sitting in the passenger seat, and he's like, oh, my God. He's like, I'm going to have to come up with a name for you. And he's going, anxious, uptight, something, you know. And he finally settled on nervous, I guess, for the alliteration. Nervous Neil. That's what you are. You're Nervous Neil. No, I'm just going to call you Nervous because you ain't nothing but nervous. Like, I'm like trying not to cry and everything. And he's looking out the window. He can't even make eye contact with me. And then I didn't think anything more of it. And then first night on stage, it's like he's introducing everybody. And it's like, ladies and gentlemen, on the saxophone, Nervous. And I just thought, this is not going to be my big break. But then, you know, it's kind of like a lot of other things. You take the insult and you kind of embrace it and you own it. And there are so many Neil Smiths. I don't know if you've noticed. So when I tried to get a website, neilsmith.com is Alice Cooper's drummer.
Get out.
Spelled the same way.
Really?
Yes. He's the rockin' realtor now.
Yeah. The rockin'.
That's how a music career will treat you.
Yeah.
And then there's a really good jazz drummer in Kansas City, younger guy named Neil Smith. Spelled the same way, N-E-A-L, which is the uncommon spelling.
Yeah.
And then if you've ever gone to Des Moines, you'll notice signs for the Neil Smith Wildlife Refuge.
Get out.
He was a senator. He got booted out of office in the mid-90s when Newt Gingrich had his contract with America. I've got some of his campaign posters, though, in case I want to run for office. So I'm all set.
Good to be prepared.
Yeah. Good to vote for Neil.
I am so grateful you shared that story because it has always worked. And just so you know, the reason it's stuck in my head is when you are performing, and when I've heard you play, you've been in bands and bands that have been very tight and very, I think, polished. The last thing I would think of your style is nervous. You were just so in the flow that it's the sort of the non sequitur side of it that makes me think, well, why would this guy be Nervous Neil Smith? So I've always wanted to know the answer to that question. Thank you for giving us the backstory.
There is a song from the late 40s. Back when the tenor saxophone was the original rock and roll instrument before the guitar, you know, you'd always have these rock bands like Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard and Fats Domino. They always had a screaming tenor horn, tenor saxophone. And then the guitar took over after Buddy Holly and the Beatles and all that kind of stuff. But there was a guy named Big J. McNeely, and he had his saxophone coated with phosphorus so it would glow in the dark and everything. And he had a song called Nervous Man Nervous. Kind of dig that cat. He's nervous. And it's like, isn't that a cool thing? Look at how nervous. So I thought, oh, well, maybe this is, you know, if you go back far enough, or if you look deep enough, you can find a way to make that sound kind of okay.
Right, right.
So, but I did used to stare at my shoes when I played.
Really?
I was terrified that somebody, I would catch the, make eye contact with somebody in the audience, and they'd be sitting there with their arms folded and shaking their head. No.
Wow.
Looking at me and judging me. Yeah.
I never got that vibe from you.
So then I started wearing sunglasses. Yeah. So then if I did make eye contact, they couldn't tell
they
I was making eye contact. Yeah.
Brilliant.
And then I realized it's like, nobody's staring at me. What was I? Why would they? Nobody's thinking about me. That's the good news. Nobody's thinking. So that was a relief. And I just thought, oh, okay. And, you know, from there on, it took me a couple of years of performing with a band on stage to realize that nobody was there.
Well, it's not true of you, because we were thinking, we were cheering you on and listening to some great music with you and your bandmates. But you just reminded me, there was a book that my father gave. I have two brothers, so he had three sons to deal with.
Mm.
And all of us, when we were in our 30s-ish or something, he gave us this great book by a guy named Roger Rosenblatt, just a wonderfully talented comedic writer, called Rules for Aging. And I think it could be for either gender, but very appropriate for men, because one of the rules was nobody is thinking about you.
That's so liberating to realize.
Isn't
that
it great?
Yeah.
Isn't it great? I got to go back and read that again and probably get a copy for my son. He's probably about old enough right now. Mm. My guest is Nervous Neil Smith. And so thank you for giving me that insight. But also now I need to know, because I'm learning so much. Where did you actually grow up?
Princeton, Illinois.
Oh, wonderful place. Yeah. Wonderful place.
Yeah, I mean, it's done pretty well. Walmart moved into town and kind of dried up all the downtown businesses. Yeah. There used to be a pharmacy. The shoe store is still in business. Anderson Marsart's still in business. But, you know, it's now a lot of quilting shops and such.
And a great place to catch the Amtrak.
It is, yes.
Yeah, yes. Wonderfully safe parking lot. I've left a car there for days on
end. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you could leave it unlocked and you'd be fine.
It's a neat town.
It is.
And then from Princeton,
it was on a farm outside of Princeton.
A farm guy. Okay, yeah. Okay. And then where did you wind up in high school? Which high school?
Princeton.
So, all right.
Yep.
When did you pick up the saxophone, or was there another instrument first?
When I was in fifth grade, I was 9 years old. My birthday's in March. They told us that there was going to be a day and this man was going to come into town and he was going to have instruments. We could try out any instrument we wanted to. And I'm going to play the violin. Because I love listening to especially romantic music, Schumann Fauré and, you know, the French romantic composers and some of the German lead writers. And I wanted to play the violin. I wanted to play Traumerei and, you know, things like that.
At nine,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Attaboy.
Yeah. So went into the auditorium. They called us in one by one. We'd taken an assessment test before to see if we were tone deaf or whatever. And I went in, and I now know that the man who was demonstrating the instruments was Jim Partridge from Griggs Music. He looked like Burl Ives.
Huh.
Yeah. And he goes, "Hi, young man. What would you like to play?" And I said, "I want to play a violin." And he goes, "Oh, I don't have any violins. Your school's not going to have an orchestra. You're going to have a band." And I just said, they said we could play anything.
Mm.
So I started walking out of the auditorium. I was like, that's it. I'm not going to be a musician. I got halfway through the auditorium and he goes, "Wouldn't you like to try something else?" Just to be polite, I turned around and I pointed at a saxophone because I knew my mom had a friend whose daughter had one that wasn't being used. And I thought, there's no way my parents are going to buy anything.
Yeah, yeah.
So I pointed at a saxophone. I was like, I'll try that. And good thing, too, because I started the violin later, and there's a learning curve on that.
Oh, yeah.
The bowing technique and getting your fingers in the right position and everything. There are no frets. Saxophone, you can learn everything. You can learn all of the notes, the 32-note range, in 6 months.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's an easy instrument, so it's a good thing.
Yeah, my elementary instrument was the clarinet, and I wish I would have stuck with it. Did not. But I thought you were going to tell me something like, it looks so shiny that, well, let's try that one. But no, you were very methodical in your thinking. You were already thinking that a friend had one that you might be able to use.
I was a number two kid, so I was, you know, it's going to be hand-me-down. Yeah.
You're
not
getting
it.
There you go. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, number three is even worse.
You're number three in birth order?
Yeah. Yeah, I defy you to find a picture of me between birth and about, I don't know, three. And then I was maybe in one of my brother's birthday parties. You know,
they ran out of film, Kai.
Well, they ran out of interest, let's be honest. That's another story. So you pick up the saxophone, and then you were able to get instruction in sax.
Yeah. And the weird thing is, usually they start kids at like a nine-year-old. They'd start you on alto because your hands are small and they can't fit around the horn. You're going to hit all the side keys accidentally.
Yeah.
They put me on tenor. The thing came down to my ankles almost.
My goodness.
So I don't know how that happened, but that was a good thing too, because if I was always the best tenor player because there were only one or two of us.
Yeah.
And I was the one that cared.
Yeah, okay.
If I had been playing alto, there were five or six of them,
yeah,
and there were some people who were serious about it,
yeah,
and I probably would have been overlooked and given up.
It meant to be. So did they have, well, they had band. Did they have like a pep band, other things like that, other genres you could learn in Princeton?
In junior high school, it was concert band and marching band.
Okay.
The band director had been a drill sergeant for the Marines.
Love it. Love it.
He had these mobiles, these paper things that would hang above the band room that he made. And one side said, results, not excuses. The difficult we do today, the impossible, ... takes a little longer. That kind of thing. And he never yelled at us, but you knew when he got on the podium, everything got quiet. It had always been like that. And when I got into it, it was always like that. And you just knew. So we marched. We marched, and he would check our shoes to make sure that they were white. And if they weren't, he'd give us a piece of chalk. It's like, you need to clean that up.
Wow.
Yep. And we had to wear we got medals for solo contests. We'd have to wear those on our uniforms as we marched. I mean, very military-like.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then high school was just pretty laid back.
And but it was the hook had set sufficiently that when you were looking around for college experiences, you set your sights on saxophone as a major.
No, I wanted to be an astronomer.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
How did we not get you at Augustana? I don't know how that's possible.
I don't know.
We didn't try hard.
Well, enough. No, I do know. In Illinois at that time, this is in the late 70s, early 80s, I graduated in 81. I auditioned for the district jazz band.
Yeah.
And as a freshman and a sophomore, that's what you did, you know. Didn't make it as a freshman. I made the district jazz band as a sophomore and, you know, didn't hear anything else. And then as a junior, I did it again. You know, I just figured I'd do it all 4 years because it's a thing. And then after a couple months, my band director called me into his office and he said, we need to talk. I was a good kid.
Yeah.
You know? And he said, you made All-State Jazz Band.
Hey.
And I thought, this is clearly a joke. There's no such thing as an All-State Jazz Band. That's for athletics and things like that. So I didn't believe him. This is going to sound like a joke too, but I got bullied a little bit by band kids. That's how bad it was. I think it was because I smelled like a goat. We had dairy goats.
Mm.
And there were motorcycle parts in the bathtub, so I never took a shower. So I probably deserved it. Hopefully I'm not ranked today. Anyway, he called me into his office.
You turned out all so right. Let's just put that on the table.
He tells me that, and my first thought is like, how am I going to get there?
Mm.
My parents were going to take me to Chicago.
Mm.
And my band director made it clear he wasn't going to go. So he goes, you're going to have to find a ride from another band director. So I did. I just thought, well, yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, All-State Jazz Band. And I met this guy from Illinois State, this beatnik band director, saxophone professor and jazz band director at Illinois State, Jim Boydus. And we were doing the rehearsal and he was like, hey, man, you guys sound pretty good. I could use a little bit more bass kick drum on the 2 and 4, 2, 3, 4. And then he counted us off and I just thought, man, this guy, I'd never heard anybody talk like that before.
Right.
And then he was trying to explain something to somebody about how swing worked or something. Mm-hmm. So he gets out his alto. He had his alto sax with him. And I thought, oh, this guy's a saxophone player. And he goes, it's like, how many of you guys are listening to J.S. Bach? You ever heard of J.S. Bach? And everybody's like, bah, nobody listens to classical music. So then he gets his horn and he plays some Bach. And, you know, he's playing some, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, check this out, man. I'm going to do the same thing, but I'm going to swing it. You know, boop, bop, boop, bop, boop, bop, ba, dee, ba, dee, ba, dee, ba, dee. So if you take Baroque music and you swing the 16th notes, it sounds like bebop.
Oh,
that's the point he was trying to make.
Yeah.
And all of our minds were blown.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's the guy I'm going to study with.
Oh, I totally understand.
And then he didn't teach me anything.
Well, he probably did between the highways and hedges. Something snuck in there.
But
when you were in college, what were some of the other subjects that caught your fancy? Because
astronomy.
Was it astronomy?
I did take an astronomy class,
Good.
Yeah. And when I saw how much math was involved, I thought, it's like, oh, they got to do calculations? I thought they were just looking at, like, trying to discover new moons of Saturn or something. Yeah.
Well, that's probably what killed me. I was a geography major for a hot minute.
Yep.
And when we got into remote sensing and had to do the physics of light refraction.
Right.
And, yeah, this isn't like looking at cool maps. Tops anymore. Mm-hmm. So I bailed on that.
Yeah.
Okay. So were there performance ensembles you did at Illinois State?
Jazz one.
Jazz one.
I was in jazz one all 4 years, which kept me out of marching band and the university concert band.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really got lucky. And when I was a freshman, I was always second chair. So when I was a freshman, the guy who was sitting first tenor was a guy named Jack Waltrip. And he looked like Blue Lou Marini from the Blues Brothers band. He had a goatee, which was uncommon back then. And he had a leather gig bag long hair. And he wore it in a ponytail. And I thought, this guy is too cool. I was afraid to talk to him. He was a senior and I was a freshman. And I just thought, I'm not even going to make eye. I just knew better.
Yeah.
And after he graduated, he had a band and orchestra instruments major. He graduated, and the summer after graduation, he toured with Miles Davis.
Wow.
He was a Coltrane, you know, he knew all the Coltrane patterns, and, he was kind of like that. I was intimidated by him. So they had some good musicians there.
Yeah. Well, so this is a little bit of mystery here, and you mentioned that you got into this gig in Peoria, and all of a sudden you're heading to Canada with a band that seems to be being built on the runway as you're taking off. You know, you're putting the wings on and everything. How much time together do you need, especially that early stage in your career? I imagine it takes you like 5 minutes nowadays, but how much time do you need to get that band to congeal and make its debut on stage?
That's the thing that Bernard was trying to explain to me that I didn't understand. Mm. And he was 2 years younger than me. So I just thought, you know, I've been to school for this. I know what I'm doing. And he's just like, it's just the blues, man. We'll pick up players along the way. Now that makes perfect sense. It's like, it's probably going to be a better band if you do that. Why did we rehearse? And jazz is the same way. Jazz around here, jazz players usually don't rehearse. It's like this. It's a conversation.
Yeah.
So somebody chooses a topic, which is a song, and it's like somebody counts it off. The trick is it's easy to start a song. Ending it is the trick. Like a conversation,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Well, look at the time. Exactly. I got a roast in the oven.
You know, it doesn't matter where I am. If I do have Sirius XM in my truck, if I'm driving along and going up to see the kids or something like that on the jazz station, if Sing, Sing, Sing comes up, I can't resist. I have to listen, because every time I hear it, and it's usually their same recording. It's a live recording, Goodman, and, you know.
Right.
I'm assuming it's Krupa on drums.
But oh, yeah, it is.
Just, and then listening to that conversation. And hearing new things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a musician. I don't get the magic that you happen. You are a wizard alchemist to me when I watch you guys on stage. I love it. But just that whole thing about how you're talking to each other. And even though it's the same recording made almost, you know, more than a half century, going on a century ago, right? I'm still just blown away as if it were the first time I heard it.
Yeah.
I don't know how you guys do that.
It's like speaking in English. We're improvising right now with the English language.
Yeah.
We couldn't do it in French, or maybe you could. But But it's like that. That's what I tell my students.
Yeah. Well, I'm enjoying this conversation greatly. My guest this week is Nervous Neil Smith. I'll try to just go with Neil Smith from here on out. But we've got some surprises in store for the next portion of the program. However, we are going to take just a little break and remind you, among other things, that due to some technical difficulties, we're now in the news studio. So, you know, WVIK is going to be facing some extraordinary expenses. If you've ever wanted to go over to WVIK.org and hit that donate button, now would be an exceptionally fortuitous time to do so. We'll be back in just a moment, friends, with the conversation on WVIK and my guest this week, musician, historian, and educator, Neil Smith. Please stay tuned.
Operations are partially supported by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council.
You know, when it comes right down to it, everything you hear on your public radio station is a real value. You get connected to the world just by listening. And given the divisive state of things these days, I'd say we need what public radio offers now more than ever. Your financial contribution helps us to build bridges of understanding. And that benefits everyone in our community.
Learn more at WVIK.org.
On WVIK, it's more than just art, it's talking art. I'm Ben Goujon from Quad City Arts. Join me for in-depth conversations with artists from the Quad Cities and beyond. Hear their stories, their struggles, and what drives their creative work. Listen to Talking Art, a partnership between WVIK, Quad City Arts, and Quad City Bank and Trust, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey And thanks for sticking with us, friends. You're listening to The Conversation on WVIK. My guest is Neil Smith, and I'm just trying not to fanboy out too much here because I've heard you with the Cabalas. I've heard you with the Metrolites, right?
Yep.
And what are you doing lately performance-wise that we might get a chance to hear you?
Doing more recording than live gigs.
Yeah.
Things slowed down a lot after COVID.
Yeah, I bet. But I would still see you joining gigs here and there.
Well, I saw you at the Hauberg Center.
Okay, the Hauberg Center, right? You were there, right?
Mm-hmm. With Freddie Allen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So are there any things coming up? We're now at the beginning of August. You got anything you're looking forward to? Because I want to make sure people come hear you.
I need to update the gig schedule on my website.
And what is that website?
I will get that. NervousNeil.com.
NervousNeil, spelled
N-E-A-L, the original Celtic way. N-E-I-L is a variation.
NervousNeil.com. And yes, by all means, friends, go and check that out. It's always fun to hear.
Give me a chance to update my gig schedule before you go there.
Yeah, we won't do it till next week.
All right.
That's what we'll do. We'll wait a week. So now we've been talking a lot about your performance career, but you're also an educator. And tell me how that works.
I started teaching because I was a little bit underemployed about 30 years ago, and I put in a resume at Griggs. Used to be a music store on, what is that, Kimberly and
Wasn't Brady? It out Brady?
It's now West Music.
Yeah.
Put in a resume there and didn't hear anything back, and I thought, well, that figures. And then they called me about 6 months later to let me know that a teacher had gotten married and left the area and left four students, saxophone students behind, and would I take them on? And I thought, I'm a performer, not a teacher. But I decided to teach, and I found out that all those kids were playing out of method books, and I thought, well, I can just tell them if they're playing the wrong note or not. And it's 35 years later, and it's probably one of the best things I've ever done for teaching myself, too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. If somebody had told me that 35 years ago, I wouldn't have believed it, but I'm so glad.
Yeah.
And
with your studio of students, do you still do people at the beginning of their journey, or do you select students who are maybe a little further along in their—
Either, both.
All right.
I've got some adult students. I've got some students where I have to show them how to put the horn together and how a reed works and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That happens. Usually people, well, lately it's been that word of mouth. People have heard that I've had some students that have made all-state jazz bands on both sides of the river.
Mm-hmm.
And that is attractive because that leads to scholarships. Although I have to say that at my advanced age, I've decided not to take on any more new students. So I'm sorry.
No, you've got the right to do that, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing. We get to this stage in our careers, in our lives, and I think it's the reward for leaning into your own authenticity, you know?
Yeah, okay.
I have a friend who just decided to leave what I thought was a very effective and highly, highly impactful career in higher education to do something else. But she'd earned the right to do that because she gave everything to one pursuit, and I'm sure she'll give everything to the next pursuit. And so there's this melange of feelings that someone that I've worked with for a long time is moving to something else. But there's also now at this stage in my journey, it's like, wait, you just go. You go on now because you've earned the right to do that.
Yep.
And, you know, you and I are essentially the same age.
Yep.
We know people that, you know, have maybe not been able to put that combination together.
Right.
Right. And so these days are challenging. And maybe the choice of saying, I'm not going to take new students isn't available to them. And
right.
And that's a sorrowful thing.
Yeah.
I celebrate when people can call their shots. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be able to do that.
Well,
as a working musician, that's quite a luxury.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been doing some more writing and recording. I have a home studio, and some of my stuff has been on NBC Sports, CNN, The United Shades of America use one of my tunes.
Really?
RuPaul's Drag Race keeps using the same song over and over. I don't own a TV, and I'm not a snob. I am not a snob. But if I had one, I would watch it, and nothing would get done. So my life is not compatible with television. I tell myself that I need to be creating and not consuming. So I try.
Well, I've got to listen to this. I don't tend to watch it. ton of TV either, but RuPaul I've heard of. I got to check this out, and I got to hear your music.
I never find out how my songs are getting used until I get a royalty statement from BMI, and I was like, what? Like, Drunk History? They did a remix of Drunk History, and they used one of my songs
You're
for
kidding.
That.
Not, I've seen that show. That's pretty funny. I got to get these links from you, and I got to find all these kinds of things.
I try to find it, so I find out about that, like RuPaul's Drag Race, and it's like, I got to watch this episode and see if I can hear my tune. Usually when they use it, you give them a bunch of different versions when you do the licensing. So I give them a version with the saxophone, without the saxophone. I give them a 2-second bumper either way, and I give them like bump 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 bump, that kind of thing, with and without the saxophone, because you never know how they're going to use it. Mm-hmm. And if they're talking over it, usually you don't want to hear a saxophone.
Well,
so the best use was they were interviewing Lindsey Vonn before she was going to retire for the first time, and they prominently featured one of my songs. I wrote it for a friend of mine for his podcast, and he didn't want it.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, it's no good. But I put it in the library. Jingle Punks is who I go through.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a music licensing distributor. And some supervisor comes in and goes, I want that song. And they use it very prominently.
Mm. Mm.
It plays for a full 5 seconds before she starts talking.
Yeah.
And I just thought, man, that was a nice payday.
Well, I tell you what, if we ever lose the rights to the theme music for The Conversation, which goes back to Saturday Morning Live in August of 1980, then I'm coming for you.
Okay. I was thinking of a saxophone rendition of that very same song would be cool.
It would. A saxophone rendition of anything is really cool.
I'm going to be like Professor Boyd that says, like, you know, if you swing this, man, it would sound like bebop.
Listen to this, baby.
I'm like Lambert Hendricks and Ross without the lyrics. Yeah.
So here we are making history with my guest, Neil Smith. And when we get to talking about history, though, I always lean back on my very favorite storyteller, the late Professor Roald Tweet. And yeah, that is a clunky segue, Neil, as we say in the radio business.
It's working, though.
It's working. Mm-hmm. It's time for this week's installment of Rock Island Lines.
This is Roald Tweet on Rock Island. Within 10 miles of Rock Island, 493 restaurants lie in wait, menus at attention. 479 of these serve pizza, spaghetti, salmon and dill sauce, hot beef sandwiches, Iowa pork chops, pancakes, along with potatoes that are hashed, mashed, baked, creamed, or French, cottage, or home fried. Customers sit, order, eat, tip, and leave. The remaining 14 are small-town diners, seating an average of 34 customers apiece, except for Sunday noon, when they open the banquet room in back after church. These diners, with names like Vivian's, Deb's, or Adolph's, are the small stages on which are enacted the daily scenes of small-town life. As in church, food is only part of the liturgy. It is to these diners that the men come at 9:30 each morning, from tractors in the field, or from fixing cars or clerking hardware. They gather in a circle at the round center table for coffee and hot cinnamon rolls just out of the oven. But they are also here to debate last night's Cubs game, plan fishing trips, compare DeKalb with Northrop King. Shortly after 10, the women arrive and slide into booths along the wall for coffee and cookies. First the young mothers with babies and infants, then the few working women who get a break. They share the community news of marriages and deaths and births. They exchange suggestions for treating colds and rashes in children. The only men allowed to sit with the women are the town grocer and the occasional new groom who may come here with his wife for a month before returning to the circle of men. After that, he will nod at her as he leaves and she arrives. The women leave in time for the men to return at 11:30 for the $2.69 dinner, salad, meat, mashed potatoes, carrots, and rhubarb pie. Little talk here, dinner is serious. The diners remain open until the kids coming home from school have stopped in for candy and a bottle of pop. By 4, the curtains will have come down, the day's play over. Actors and actresses scattered to their homes for supper and a night's sleep.
Rock Island Lines with Roll Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
And we get to hear it each and every week thanks to folks just like you becoming members of this radio station. You can do so at wvik.org. Look for that donate button. But right now, I want you to keep your ears open because in a moment, you're going to hear something extraordinary and I think unprecedented. But to set that up, I got to reintroduce you to my guest, Neil Smith, who we've talked about as a musician, as an educator, but you are also an historian. And how did you get into finding little bits of our musical history here in the Quad Cities?
I moved here in 1987, and I coming from Peoria, I just figured the metropolitan area is twice the size. There's going to be a lot more musical opportunities. Everybody knows about Bix, and I just thought that's going to be a jazz mecca.
Mm.
Didn't really turn out that way, but so I started going to thrift stores just, you know, to furnish my place, and it's a frugal way to live. And I went through the records, and I started seeing all these things on this label called Fredlow. I just thought, that's weird, Fredlow of Davenport, Iowa. So I just started buying them up. This is back at a time when CDs were booming.
Yeah.
They took up less space. They sounded great. They didn't wear down, and people were unloading their vinyl collections.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I'll buy things. It's like the stuff that I was buying was never going to be reissued on compact disc. I was convinced.
Right.
So I just started buying all these Fredlow things for a quarter a piece. And it turned out that I had quite a collection. And I don't know. I made a discography on a spreadsheet, and I was worried that my computer was going to crash. So I got a website about 25 years ago. NervousNeil.com.
And say it often.
And it turned out to be the most visited page on my website.
Really?
Yeah. Nobody wants to hear my music or know what I'm going to
do.
But Fredlow. And I came to realize that some of that stuff was really collectible. So I tried to convince the library. It's like, hey, I think we should find a place for this instead of just my house.
And that's the Davenport Library?
The Davenport Library, yes, because
right.
I was living in Davenport by then.
Yeah,
and so that's how that came about.
Well, I stress that because I know the Davenport Library has done a lot in terms of historic preservation, and they partnered with Augustana and our special collections to do a photo archive.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't aware of the stuff that you might have helped get them interested in musically. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, before that, they had a Bix film restored, and they've had some. They found some open reel tapes of conversations with people that had worked with them. I don't remember where they came from, and they had those restored, and so there's a little bit of history of that. But I thought there's more to the Quad Cities music scene than Big Spider Beck.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But we cherish that too. We just had the festival and all that kind of stuff, and it's fantastic. But we're going to get to something that you're going to share with us in just a moment, but of your discoveries, whether it's Fredlow, which, by the way, very charming. I think you said that was a contraction.
Fred and Lois.
Fred
Bonk,
and Lois.
Yes.
I love that because I had a grandmother, Lois. I
mean, Lois.
Fredlow. I love it. But what are some things, I'm not asking you to pick a favorite child, but some things that have been just really extraordinary finds through your lens?
Very recently, a few months ago, a collector from Galesburg that knew I was looking, the precursor to Fredlow was Intercity Recording Service in Moline.
Wow.
Same recording engineer. It was Fred Mock. And it was mostly production stuff for radio, sound effects, and things for local recordings that are going to get played on the NBC radio network, for instance. And he would do that. This lasted for about 2 years, 1947 and 1949. And this collector in Galesburg let me know that it's like, I've got some inner city records that you might be interested in. It's like, I'm interested regardless of what it is.
Yeah.
Even if it's a drive-in theater, you know, plug or something like that.
Yeah.
And he said, I think they're jazz guys. And I said, okay. And he sent me some screenshots of the label, and it was Louis Belson.
Oh, get out.
Louis Belson, in 1948, had a gig at Al's Horseshoe Club in Rock Island for a month. He was with Tommy Dorsey's band. Tommy Dorsey is the big band leader who kind of brought Frank Sinatra to prominence.
Yep.
So Tommy Dorsey's band was on break. So three of Tommy Dorsey's guys I'm going to get the names wrong. It was Louis Belson, and I think Buddy DeFranco was with Dorsey then, and Charlie Shavers wasn't. It was three guys from Dorsey's band, and then the other three guys were from like Cab Calloway, Benny Goodman, I can't remember. But anyway, it was an all-star group, and they were playing at Al's Horseshoe Club for a month.
Unbelievable.
They went into Intercity Recording Services during a recording ban. It was an integrated band. So, I mean, yeah. There are three reasons why this shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
During a recording ban, an integrated band. And
now, what was a recording ban? I don't.
There were two big ones in the Musicians Union. The first one was for like 2.5 years or something.
Okay.
And it was because some uppity DJ had figured out how to play records on the radio, and that was going to put live musicians out of work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the Musicians Union went on strike. It's like, that's it. No more recordings. We're going to figure this out.
Yeah, ask Taylor Swift how that worked out.
Yes. Yeah. So that lasted for, it was like 2.5 years, the first one. The second recording ban was in 1948, almost
Crazy.
The entire calendar
Crazy.
Year. And that was because there was this new medium called television, and they were trying to figure out that.
What to do with that.
Yes, because
that's
that,
fascinating. I didn't know anything about that. But I want to get back to the Horseshoe Club.
Oh, yeah.
This is amazing because Belson, did you ever hear about his commencement speech? Speech at Augustana. It's one of the best I've ever been a part of.
Oh, I hope
and I've been
recorded.
Part of a lot of them.
Yeah.
And what happened was we wanted to honor him. Mm-hmm. And this is when we were older days. We were in our sweaty old gym with no AC. And he spoke briefly about growing up in Moline.
Yeah.
And even taking a class or two over at Augustana, getting a little that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden he said, who am I kidding? You don't want to hear me talk. You want to hear me play. And of course, it was no surprise because there was a drum kit set off to the side.
Right.
But some students from Augustana's jazz program jammed with him for about 20 minutes.
Man.
And it was just heavenly. It was amazing. And the place went nuts.
Yep.
I mean, just it was one of the best commencement addresses I've ever heard. And it consisted of about, 83 words.
He was so influential. He invented the double kick drum when he was 15. As an art project in Moline High School.
And then we should do a whole episode just on him, but we got to get to this recording here in a minute. So you got him from the Horseshoe Club. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, okay, here's what I've been teasing all this whole time, friends, is that when Neil and I were talking about getting together for this conversation, he told me about a very special appropriate recording that would have been heard on airwaves similar to WVIK once upon a time. But with that set up, what do you got for us, Neil?
Well, it's going to be Christmas in August. on December 15th, 1948, the NBC Radio Network broadcast a 15-minute long Christmas program of the Augustana Choir. And the collection at the library, we got a grant to preserve all this stuff. Mm. So the collection at the Davenport Public Library has this lacquer, 10-inch lacquer recording from Intercity Recording Service of Moline, and it is the Augustana Choir presenting a 15-minute long Christmas program on the NBC Radio Network nationwide.
Nationwide. Well, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And we're not going to listen to the whole thing,
nope.
But we wanted to give you a taste. And I know that there's a lot of Augustana Choir fans out there because WVIK used to play it at least twice a week, signing on and signing off. But with that cue up, thanks to Neil Smith, friends, set your Wayback Machines for December 15th, 1948, and here we go.
From the campus of Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois, through the facilities of station WOC, Davenport, Iowa, NBC is presenting the nationally famous Augustana Choir under the direction of Henry Veld, conductor. In the spirit of this Yuletide season, this outstanding choir of 70 mixed voices will be heard in a program of traditional Christmas music. As an opening theme, the Augustana Choir has hummed the old Swedish hymn, Figuri kan ingen bard, Children of the Heavenly Father, which proves that the music of Christmas is as universal as Christmas itself. It comes to us from all countries, in all tongues. And tonight, it is beautifully interpreted by the Augustana Choir, which sings first, How Brightly Beams the Morning Star, written by Nikolai and harmonized by his compatriot, Bach.
How brightly beams
friends, just a few seconds of the Augustana Choir under the direction of its founder, Henry Veld. Thanks to my guest, Neil. Oh my gosh, how did you find this, Neil?
I found this at a thrift store. I don't remember when. I didn't document where and when I found them. There used to be a really good Goodwill store on Locust Street, and I would stop by there on a regular basis, and they would always be dumping records. And 25 cents a piece, I'm pretty sure that was one of those, and it was stored without a sleeve. Part of my job was to take these recordings. I've just done this recently. I digitize it. I have an 8-speed turntable with 9 different styluses and all this kind of stuff. So, it helps to have the right equipment. It makes things easier. Whew. And then I use spectrum analysis to get rid of all the surface noise because these old lacquer records don't hold up very well.
Well, it's just to fill in your research, choral singing is a big part of the Swedish ethos that they brought over with them.
Yep.
So there were always these choral groups from early on. Augustana initially didn't admit women. Our first female graduate was in 1881 or so. And they had separate men's and women's singing groups. The Orioles or the Jenny Lind singers were the women.
Jenny Lind,
and then the Wennerbergs, which named for an obscure composer, were the men. And then finally this Henry Veld in 1931 said, you know what, we're combining them. And so their very first concert was at Orchestra Hall in Chicago in 1931. Mm-hmm. And they did develop a national reputation. Years after this, they were on the Ed Sullivan Show singing "Oh, What a Beautiful Morning" from Oklahoma in Swedish. It was just, you know, it's crazy. But, and they still tour. Earlier this summer, got to accompany an alumni component of the Augustana Choir tour of Scandinavia, where they once again sang that song you heard at the beginning, in the Uppsala Cathedral. In Sweden. It's just, and you can actually go online if I think the college's alumni Facebook page or something. Let's just look on the website. You can find a recording of or just a view of their live performance. But this is extraordinary. I'm so grateful that you found this and that you shared it with us.
I'm grateful to the library for curating all of this because otherwise it would just be sitting on a shelf in my studio.
Isn't that what's I mean, you know, I got to earlier in my career, spent about 9 or 10 months helping the Augustana Art Museum. And what's so frustrating is that more than half of those works in that collection are never going to see the light of day.
Right.
Unfortunately, over time, we developed a collection that's bigger than the Figgies in terms of numbers of pieces.
Wow.
Without the display space, right? So we display it all over campus. But to think that it's tantalizing to think of what music is out there that you might yet find, my friend.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So how do you continue your research and exploration? I mean, there's not as many Goodwills with vinyl anymore.
But that, you know, I'm almost kind of grateful for that. Everything's on eBay now and selling for hundreds and thousands of dollars. Some of this Fredlow stuff is going for thousands of dollars.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
Especially the garage bands.
Tell me about those.
Well, you know what I've come to find out? There was a garage band, two different garage bands under two different names. There was one called Godspeed and one called Frank Allen. There was nobody in the band named Frank Allen. It's Bettendorf High School kids, 1969, 1970.
Yeah.
And these records go for hundreds of dollars.
Really?
Two 45s, one by Frank Allen and one by Godspeed. Godspeed actually recorded an entire album at Fredlow that's never been released. How do I know this? It's my best friend Steve Couch was in the band.
Get out.
Steve Couch, Jeff Goldstein. From Riverboat Development was in it. And Michael Weindrick and Bruce Weindrick were both in it too. And what a lot of people don't know.
I know these guys.
These records are perceived to be scarce. It's because Steve, I shouldn't admit this, Steve has a box of them under his bed at home.
So they wonder, was that Frank Allen or was that the other one?
Both.
Both. Yeah. I wonder, you know, because Lynyrd Skynyrd was a big deal.
All right,
naming for a teacher. Maybe there was a teacher named Frank Allen.
I need
or
to ask Steve
like that.
About that. I'm going to see him later today.
Oh, what a delightful story. Oh, that's fantastic.
But it's the same with Bruce. Bruce and Jeff had a band called The Warming Trend. And the Weindricks, I think, are from Rock Island, right?
Yeah.
Bruce and Michael.
And Michael went to Augustana.
Yes,
and,
but Jeff Goldstein's, I think, went to Bettendorf High School.
Yes, he did.
And they had a band called The Warming Trend.
Well, I just saw him. I'm sorry to be gossipy here, but just saw him up at Hauberg. I mean, you and I were at Hauberg, right?
Yeah. So, he's always out.
Yeah, please.
He's always out listening to music.
Yeah.
But The Warming Trend, and I met with Mike Weindrick for coffee, And he gave me a copy of the record that had never been played. He goes, I got a box of these.
Oh, my gosh.
But again, that goes for not hundreds, but it goes for a really good price.
Yeah. And it should.
Yeah.
It should. But it's also nice of you, Neil, to be sharing these treasures with the Davenport Public Library so they become part of a searchable database that these researchers from that you and I will never meet will find out more about this.
Yep.
And I think that's terribly exciting.
It's all at the library, and you can go and listen. The Belson, Louis Belson acetates with Ike Quebec on tenor saxophone, Charlie Shavers on trumpet, John Simmons on upright bass. He used to play with Raymond Scott and Benny Goodman.
Yeah.
And who am I missing here?
Well, I have a dear friend.
Buddy DeFranco on clarinet.
I have a dear friend here in town, Ross, and his dad was a musician who didn't do a lot of touring, I don't think, but was, you know, always around here locally. And sometimes when Louis and his spouse,
Francine, Francine was his second, is his second wife.
Well, what was his connection with Pearl?
Pearl Bailey was his first wife.
That was his first one.
Yes. Okay.
Well, this goes back to those days. They'd come by and then they'd paint the town several shades of red. Mm-hmm. And then apparently, this is the story from my friend Ross, Pearl just loved loose meat sandwiches. And, you know, you're basically in the home of Made Right, loose meat sandwiches. And so they'd always go out and grab a whole bag of those and wake the kids up at like 3 a.m. Hey, come have some loose meat sandwiches. What a great memory for a kid to have.
Yep.
You know what? We're going to run out of time, but just quickly, I always like to ask interesting people like you, my friend, what are you reading? Are you consuming any media that you'd want to recommend to us?
I read a lot and I don't commit to a book.
That's okay.
I have commitment
issues.
What
are you starting?
One of my favorite books I keep going back to is I Know Why the Caged Brad Sings by Brad Harvey.
Oh, sure.
Yes.
Brad, yep. Oh, man.
And so History of Quad City Music. And Flowers in the Dustbin by James Miller, which is the history of rock and roll from 1947 to 1977.
Oh, that's amazing. And, you know, I should confess, I start a lot of books too. So for some reason, I got three things on my bookshelf that I should be reading right now. And I decided to go out and get a new translation of the Aeneid, which is what follows up after the Odyssey.
Yep.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You know where we're at.
Yep.
So anyway, Neil, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks for letting me in the door.
Oh my gosh. This has been a riot. And listen, remember, friends, all of you, that you can catch this conversation twice each week on WVIK, Saturday mornings live at 10 o'clock, right before Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Then there's that rebroadcast nowadays, Monday evenings at 8, right after Fresh Air. You can also find recent episodes at WVIK.org. Look for us under the podcast tab. On that note, if you've got friends who are part of the Augustana Choir, you might want to tell them to look up today's episode and give it a listen. Absolutely. Well, for that, though, we're going to have to leave it there. From the campus of Augustana College, this is Kai Swanson inviting you to join us next week for The Conversation on WVIK. Next week's guest is Dave Heller with the Quad Cities River Bandits. We hope you'll join us. Until then, have a great week. Thanks for tuning into The Conversation on WVIK.
On WVIK. If you missed part of it or just want to hear it again, tune in at 8 o'clock on Monday evening, right here on WVIK. Support for WVIK, Quad Cities NPR, comes from the Regional Development Authority, distributing funds from the Rhythm City Casino Resort to help make the Quad Cities a more vibrant and inclusive community. Learn more at rdauthority.org.
I'm Mark Schwiebert from Rock Island. WVIK is my NPR station.
It's the button you can set just for NPR News here in the Iowa, Illinois area. WVIK 90.3 FM and HD Rock Island, along with 95.9 FM K240 DZ Dubuque. WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.